This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. Worldwide, chronic infection with hepatitis causes 80% of all primary liver cancers, and more than 500,000 people die each year from this lethal disease. Currently, primary liver cancer has only a 5-year survival rate of 10%. And here with more on this deadly disease is Dr. A.J. Jain. He's Associate Professor of Surgery and Associate Chief of Hepatobiliary and Pancreatic Surgery at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Jain. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So hepatitis is on the rise worldwide. Why is that?
There are multi-factorial reasons for that. In some countries, and especially in parts of Asia, parts of the Middle East, hepatitis B especially is endemic, and the incidence of hepatitis C is also quite high. So just through population growth and through sanitation practices and surgery and blood transfusion and through IV drug abuse, these things can be spread. In the United States, certainly hepatitis C transmission is strongly associated in the current age with IV drug abuse, and in the past has been associated with blood transfusions before screening was initiated in a widespread fashion, as well as a remote history of IV drug abuse back in the 1960s. So there's many people who may be carriers of this virus and who don't know that they have it.
So we're basically talking about hepatitis, which is these two viruses that you've already, and I think there's a third one. Isn't there hepatitis A as well?
Hepatitis A, but that's a completely different route of transmission, and that doesn't cause chronic infection. That's foodborne, and that's not terribly different than getting an acute flu or something of that sort. It's not going to set up a permanent infection in your liver that will set you up for a risk of cancer down the road.
So getting back to that idea, so both hepatitis B and hepatitis C have a connection to liver cancer, primary liver cancer, which
That's
is
right.
what I said. Help us understand, what is that connection? What is the mechanism for these viruses to cause this cancer?
So both hepatitis B and hepatitis C can cause chronic, long-term infection of the liver that lasts through the course of a lifetime. And over time, this can cause inflammation and changes in the liver. It can cause fibrosis of the liver, scarring, and this can lead to cirrhosis, and this can actually cause basically two long-term health problems. It can cause problems associated with cirrhosis and liver failure, and the changes in the liver can also then set you up to form a cancer as well, typically hepatocellular or liver cancer is the one we worry about.
So an actual cancer will develop in that
Correct.
Affected liver.
Yes.
Help define cirrhosis exactly, because when we make that allusion, I'm not sure our listening audience always understands what exactly is that.
So cirrhosis is a chronic disease of the liver. Basically what happens is chronic inflammation or of the liver can then cause scarring of the liver. You get fibrosis, and this progresses over time, and the normal liver tissue gets disrupted by the scarring and the fibrosis, and eventually the liver function gets compromised over time.
So it malfunctions. It's no longer
right.
doing,
it can no
doing
long,
its job.
It can't do what it's supposed to do, and then it also sets you up again to form a cancer.
So these two types of viruses, the HB and the HC, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, they cause these long-term infections. Are they both likely to cause symptoms, or is one, I've heard somewhere that one is what we call a more silent
right.
disease.
So, you know, infection with hepatitis in the acute phase can cause symptoms such as, you know, right upper quadrant pain. It can cause, you know, fevers, not feeling well. It can cause jaundice. But oftentimes, especially hepatitis C infection, can be completely asymptomatic, and people can get infected and not know they have it. And then in the long-term phase, it's often asymptomatic. You can harbor this infection for decades and have absolutely no symptoms. And sometimes the first symptoms don't present until that late-stage liver disease has set in.
But as you said, there are people who are more at risk for both of these kinds of infections. Tell us about that. Who are these people? Who would the people be that might have this and unknowingly have it?
So the main route of transmission of hepatitis B and hepatitis C is through blood, through bloodborne transmission. So one of the risk factors is IV drug abuse, sharing needles. Blood transfusions can certainly carry a risk. In the United States, we've screened the blood supply aggressively for hepatitis B and hepatitis C since the early 1990s. But people who received blood transfusions before then, especially the baby boomer generation and such, may have had an exposure to these viruses and not know it. People who have also been on dialysis prior to that time period could have also had a blood exposure as well. So they may be at risk for it as well. Folks from the developing countries who may have had surgery or been exposed to blood could certainly be at risk. It can be, some of these viruses can be transmitted sexually as well, but it's a low risk relative to actual bloodborne exposure. And also healthcare workers are at risk, especially if people have exposure to sharps or splash injuries where blood can get in the eye. So if a healthcare worker has had an occupational exposure, they may be at risk and need to be screened.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen. I'm here with Dr. A.J. Jain. He's Associate Professor of Surgery and Associate Chief of Hepatobiliary and Pancreatic Surgery at Upstate Medical University. We're talking about the increase of liver cancer in patients with chronic hepatitis. I want to get to two quick things. You can do something for both of those kinds of hepatitis. Am I correct?
There are treatments available for hepatitis. In particular, there are some now new classes of antiviral drugs. First, if you've been diagnosed with a hepatitis C infection, you can get interferon. Interferon is a treatment that's available that can actually help clear the viral load. And
which means you can be cured of it?
Not cured of it per se, but it's almost analogous to the way that you can survive with HIV for a long time with the new.
Right.
You can basically knock the viral level down, mm-hmm. keep it quiescent. And now there's a new class of antiviral drugs that have just recently become available for hepatitis C, which show great promise.
And isn't there also a vaccine for one of those?
For hepatitis B. And certainly, you know, in the United States, we recommend vaccination for hepatitis B. And if you're a healthcare worker, you certainly should be, in my opinion, vaccinated given the fact that you have a significant occupational risk for it. And it's a highly effective vaccine.
And are they also doing it for children? Are they?
They are. My children are vaccinated against hepatitis
C. So routinely, I think in this country these days, they're doing hepatitis
C. Yes, ma'am. It's a recommendation.
So let's get to primary liver cancer, because that's the killer. I mean, and that also can be silent.
That can be silent, because usually the cancer doesn't present until later stages. So what happens is you have this chronic infection in the liver, the changes occur to the liver, and then the cancer can form in that setting. And oftentimes it doesn't cause symptoms until late stages.
When we say primary versus secondary liver cancer, what's the distinction?
So liver cancer, when people think of liver cancer, a layperson would say a cancer in the liver. But a cancer can start in the liver, and that's what we as physicians would call a primary liver cancer, one that arises from liver tissue, as opposed to a cancer that may have gone to the liver from somewhere else, such as the colon. Colon cancer can go to the liver, for example.
So what other things besides the hepatitis itself can also lead to this kind of primary liver cancer? What other risk factors are there?
So if you're actually talking about hepatocellular cancer, which is the one that we most commonly talk about, that is cancer that arises from the liver tissues as opposed to the bile ducts or some other areas of the liver, that's really associated with, again, long-term inflammation, fibrosis of the liver. So one of the risk factors for that is alcohol use can also cause cirrhosis. As I said, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, there are certain liver diseases that can cause, genetic diseases that can cause also a risk factor for
liver. So family history of some kind.
Typically, usually it's not so much a family history of hepatocellular cancer, but there are other chronic liver conditions that are rare, but that can cause inflammation in the liver that can predispose you.
How about obesity and diabetes? Do those also predispose
you? In general, I'm not aware of any link between obesity and diabetes. Actually, let me clarify that statement. Obesity now is actually being associated with something called non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, NASH is the acronym for it. And that can cause, again, chronic inflammation of the liver. And we do expect over time that we may see a rise in the incidence of hepatocellular cancer that is not really associated with classic risk factors such as, you know, alcohol use or hepatitis infection. And what happens is if people have steatohepatitis, which is a fancy word for inflammation of the liver due to fat, a fatty liver, then that can also cause changes in the liver that lead to cirrhosis and ultimately hepatocellular cancer.
And is there any gender distinction here? I mean, is it more apt, would you be more apt to get liver cancer as a male or a female?
I'm not aware offhand of a gender difference. That doesn't mean that there is one, but there are some data to suggest that women actually may be more susceptible to the changes associated with fat in the liver.
As I said before, liver cancer is a silent killer because I guess you don't get pain until much later. So how would you recommend both prevention and then later treatment for this problem? Because obviously, it's as I said, there's not a very long-term cure rate for it.
So I think starting off with prevention, I think that I'm a strong believer in the vaccines. I think for the hepatitis B, there is a vaccine that's available, and I think that it's very wise to have this vaccine. It's a preventable, it's a highly effective, and it's a effective vaccine. In terms of hepatitis C, there is not a vaccine. I mean, I'm looking forward to the day when they actually do make a vaccine for it. Then there's also general risk factor avoidance, obviously, avoiding IV drug use. If people are using IV drugs, they should absolutely not share needles, use needle exchange program, dispose of the needles appropriately. Alcohol avoidance, again, maintaining a healthy body mass index so that you're not falling to the range of obesity where you might be at risk for steatohepatitis. That actually is not going to prevent hepatitis, I'm sorry. That would have
prevent the liver cancer.
Prevent
itself.
Liver disease and liver cancer and the alcohol as well.
But didn't the CDC recently say that they wanted most people born between 1945 and 65, so-called baby boomers, to be tested at least once for the hepatitis C virus?
That's a very recent recommendation, and that's, again, because there's a high possibility, you know, there's a high risk for the baby boomer generation to have been exposed and potentially not know about it. You may not be aware that you got blood when you were a child or that you might have had an exposure, or people may be experimented with drugs once.
In the very little bit of time we have left, who should be screened for liver cancer itself?
People who have a known diagnosis of hepatitis B or C, or who have liver disease associated with alcohol use or fatty disease. And again, by visiting your primary care doctor and by undergoing certain screening tests, such as for the virus or routine blood work, they may be able to, if they discover that you have liver disease, then you should probably be screened for hepatocellular cancer, which can be done through ultrasound or other imaging studies.
So imaging is the light.
And also there's some blood work that they can do as well.
Wonderful. Well, the takeaway obviously is screening, especially if you have any risk factors at all for either of these viruses. Thank you so much.
Thank you very
Appreciate
much.
Appreciate your time very much. My guest has been Dr. A.J. Jain. He's Associate Professor of Surgery and the Associate Chief of Hepatobiliary and Pancreatic Surgery at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.